When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works and SNR Remodeling. Joining us now, the associate editor of the Capital Times, John Nichols. Comrade, well, I bet you didn't know when you turned on your television this morning that there's more important things than another Saturday Night Massacre. Okay, so here is, obviously we're talking about Don McGahn, the White House legal counsel, refusing to fire the special counsel.
Basically talking the president down from firing Robert Mueller.
Well, he's out and out refused to carry out his order and threatened
apparently,
to quit.
Apparently. Yeah.
Evidently, yeah. He didn't want to be part of a crime, right?
Yeah, but Trump doesn't want to be without lawyers.
here is Fox, our friends from Fox, the Trump News Channel.
That we've been wearing ever since. Meanwhile, let's take a look at the cover of the New York Times up there in the corner. Ted, this corner over here. There's a big story that apparently the President of the United States last June wanted to fire Robert Mueller because the President felt that he had a bunch of conflicts of interest, could not adequately be the special counsel.
That's right. And so the President in Davos, which we're going to bring some of that sound today, he doesn't think the story was all that true, maybe calling it a fake. Take a listen to the president.
Fake news, folks. Fake news.
What's your message today?
Typical New York Times fake stories.
Did you try and fire Robert Mueller?
So speaking of typical New York Times, you look in the first paragraph, all of this reporting based on four people who are told of the matter.
Right.
It also screams of a leak from the special counsel, because we did know a little bit about this. We heard back in June that there were talks of the president wasn't happy with Bob Mueller. What would he do?
Right.
But some new details that may or may not actually be true.
All right. Well, the president says it's fake news. That happened last June. Do you know, it's something we have to tell you about because it is a headline in the New York Times. What do you think about that? Do you even care? Something you probably do care about is immigration.
Do you even care?
Do you even care? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That must be a special section of journalism school where they teach that, right? You know, it's like up here in the corner of the New York Times. You know, barely. I guess they're still publishing. Barely noted this, but there's a little thing over here in the corner about I don't know the president. You know, trying to fire the person who's investigating him and people around him, at least, for all sorts of incredible wrongdoing. The whole country's kind of watching it. Whole Congress seems to be destabilized by it. Now, I know people don't care about this, but we should probably comment on it before we go to immigration.
Well, if you think that's good. The night before when the story broke, so that we're recording this podcast Friday morning, so this would have been Thursday night. Here's your friend, Sean Hannity.
Oh, good.
For example, they're trying to change the story. At this hour, the New York Times is trying to distract you. They have a story that Trump wanted Mueller fired sometime last June, and our sources, and I've checked in with many of them, they're not confirming that tonight. And the president's attorney dismissed the story and says, no, no comment, we're not going there. And how many times has the New York Times and others gotten it wrong? All right, so we have sources tonight just confirming to Ed Henry that, yeah, maybe Donald Trump wanted to fire the special counsel for conflict. Does he not have the right to raise those questions? You know, we'll deal with this tomorrow night. We have a shocking video of the day to bring you, by the way. This footage comes to us from Arizona where you see that red SUV.
You see that red SUV?
It's a car chase thing. Yeah, I did see it. And I thought, yeah, this is really great, right? It must have been, I have almost no interest in what Hannity said there, but I would be fascinated to see what happened in the studio.
Oh.
Right? Like, after Hannity says that, and he goes to break, and people are like,
Well, listen,
you know, John.
It's interesting. The White House has been asked the question whether anything like this had happened for a while. Here's a kind of a montage of White House responses to, is the president going to fire Robert Mueller?
Does the president commit to not firing Robert Mueller?
The president has not even discussed that. The president is not discussing firing Bob Mueller.
But will he commit not to fire?
We are complying and cooperating with, he has not even discussed not fire. He's not discussed firing Bob Mueller.
For the 1,000th time, we have no intentions of firing Bob Mueller.
Is he setting the stage for firing
Chuck,
Bob Mueller?
There's no way he's going to fire him. There's no conversation about that whatsoever in the White House.
No, I'm not. No. What else? What, are you surprised?
There you go.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, the funny thing about it is that, I mean, why would anybody speculate about that? What would lead people into thinking there was a possibility that that could happen? The fact that he fired the head of the FBI? I mean, you know, it's not like it's a kooky speculation. The guy has a bit of a track record. And also, I mean, pretty good evidence that he tends to be perhaps a little bit...
intemperate?
Impulsive. Intemperate's another good word. Yeah, I was thinking of impulsive. And so where you get into the interesting part is, obviously, this notion that this has never been discussed. It's never come up. Now, I would suggest to you, and this is in fairness to Trump, I think due diligence on the part of, you know, the staff and the people around him, the president himself, would be to have discussions of all their options, you know, and if this inquiry extends into places that it shouldn't have gone, it gets, as people will say, out of control or things like that. I mean, you have to imagine that even if it isn't, and I believe the Times report, but even if it didn't go to that extent, do you really believe that in the Trump White House there was never any discussion about what to do as regards this inquiry? And
John, you know, can we move on to immigration now? Let's just move on to immigration.
Right.
Or
yeah.
I have a
car chases in Arizona.
I have a car chase in Los Angeles from KNBC if you'd like to watch that.
I think I'll stick with the topic.
Oh, but, you know. Okay. You're so boring. This is just so arcane. The American people just are watching the stock market go up, okay?
Well, they may be doing that, but you know what the interesting thing about the American people? I actually believe they can do more than one thing at a time.
Well, that is interesting. You don't think they're that myopic?
Yeah, they're like, hey, the stock market's up. I don't care what the president does.
So this, everybody kind of compartmentalizes Robert Mueller's investigation into a possible obstruction of justice versus the story about Donald Trump possibly working with the Russians to conspire to rig an election. Everybody kind of, and you know, it isn't collusion. If Mueller's going to get Donald Trump, it's going to be on conspiracy. Collusion really isn't a legal term. So here's the thing. I don't think you can separate the two. Donald Trump's behavior on the level of things that he's been willing to do throughout this process to try to obstruct justice can't be just for nothing because he's mad because there's an investigation going on. There has to be something that is so devastating that unless it's just his financial records...
Well, those could be pretty devastating.
Yeah, but again, I think the financial records have something to do with why he became in a very perilous situation with the Russians. Don't you think they were blackmailing him?
I don't know, and I'll say that with, you know.
Is that a possibility?
I understand what you're saying, but what I would suggest is, I don't know that they were blackmailing him. What I do know is this. There's an awfully lot of evidence to suggest that when he got into financial trouble, and he got into financial trouble a lot, Donald Trump looked to other people, other institutions to bail him out. And one of the people who really helped to bail him out is his Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross. Wilbur Ross, of course, as we well know, has had a lot of involvement with the Bank of Cyprus, which, of course, has been tied to Deutsche Bank, which, of course, is a place where a lot of Russian oligarchs put a lot of money. And so I don't think you have to get all the way to a blackmail discussion to say that there's stuff that, really, really ought to be investigated. You ought to find out whether Donald Trump had any knowledge whatsoever of bailouts of his businesses, of help to him financially, of deals that were given to his company or to him, his endeavors, by folks who wanted to influence him, and if he was influenced. I mean, this is not the first time we've had discussions like this in politics. This has happened in the past. We've had members of Congress and others who were, you know, literally run out of Congress because of issues of foreign influence. This goes back to the founding of the country. So, I mean, there's just a duty to get to the bottom of that. And do I think Donald Trump would prefer that folks don't get to the bottom of his financial transactions and his financial actions? Yes, I really believe that, because I frankly think two things come. You have the potential to find quite a bit of wrongdoing. And two, you also have the potential to find out a lot about Donald Trump, which I don't think the American people really fully understand, that he was far from some business genius or some managerial genius. But like George W. Bush, he was a son of privilege who got money up front, did not do always a great job of managing it, but always seemed to get bailed out. And that called into question maybe even how good a businessman he was.
So for the people that propagate his legitimacy as a president, whether it be Trump Television and the Fox News Channel, or whether it be right-wing radio, I often wonder whether they really know the same things that we know about Donald Trump, but it's simply a business decision, because there's a whole lot of people out there that love Donald Trump. So the other day, the president did kind of impromptu presser without the cameras, but he talked about that he would meet with Robert Mueller. First of all, I don't really think he has a choice. Second,
well, but there's a question of how much you fight it.
Right.
How hard you make that process.
And what parameters you draw. What parameters you draw about the conversation. But here's the knee-jerk reaction from Trump TV and Rush Limbaugh and some others.
Under no circumstances should he grant Mr. Mueller an interview. It's a suicide mission. It's a very clear perjury trap.
Do you think that's a good move for him?
Horrible. And if I were his attorney, I would grab him by the ankle to prevent him from going into a room and giving sworn testimony, walk into a perjury trap.
I wouldn't let him get anywhere near this. Trump improvises as he goes. I just think it's a rotten idea. It's just a perjury trap. Even if Mueller's not setting it up as a perjury trap, it still is one.
What's that?
Interesting phrase.
All right.
Perjury trap.
Your observation about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting phrase, perjury trap, right? Because all the people who actually like Trump are admitting, yeah, you know, he kind of is a little out there when he talks about stuff. He kind of, quote-unquote, improvises. And so I'm intrigued by the phrase perjury trap. And whether it might be rephrased as perjury prospect, i.e. that if you put Trump into that room, there's an unfortunate possibility that he will perjure himself. Not that he was trapped into it, but that his tendency to, quote-unquote, improvise might lead him into some pretty bad legal waters. I think those people are exactly right.
Comrade Nichols, you're being very gentle. I'm going to be a little more direct. Okay. They know he's a liar.
Oh, well, that is another way of putting it, of course, when you say that he improvises.
You know, we dance around, people dance around how Donald Trump acts. He's a perpetual liar. It's proven. It's without any debate or question. The man lies. He lies on top of his lies on top of his lies. I've never seen anyone lie more.
Well, I think that, you know, you remember Stanley Cutler?
Yes.
The great historian?
His son, who I believe works for Secret Service now, was on the Feingold campaign. So I got to know Stanley Cutler.
One of the great historians of the presidency.
Right.
And he said that one of the duties of each new president is to make his predecessors look better. And not duties, but one of the realities, at least. And I think there's simply no question that Donald Trump, in 1 year, pretty amazingly, has cleaned Richard Nixon up almost completely.
And George W. Bush.
Well, I mean, but Nixon was known. I mean, Nixon was so well known as a liar that he had to officially announce he wasn't one, you know. Uh-huh. And I think now people look back at Nixon. In fact, I've talked to people that worked with Nixon, and they invariably say, yeah, there was a lot of bad stuff there. But compared to Trump, this is a model of rectitude.
Stand by. We'll talk more with John Nichols from the Capital Times at sliceoffice.com.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. We're talking to John Nichols from the Capital Times. So we covered the Donald in his latest effort to obstruct justice. And now let's cover the Donald. Oh, excuse me. Let me start over again here. We covered the Ronald in his latest effort to obstruct justice. Now let's cover our friend, the Ronald. Did I get that right? Oh my God. All right. Let's try this one more. Poor Dylan's going to have to edit this. Okay. Let me just start from the beginning here. Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and our friends at St. Vincent de Paul and the Axley Law Firm and Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. So, John Nichols, the first part of this podcast was dedicated to the president, Donald Trump, the Donald, in his latest effort to obstruct justice. Now let's go to his, as you would say, consigliere, our friend, the Ronald, the incarnate Joe McCarthy. Okay? Is that fair?
That's a rough reference to the senator from the Fox Valley.
Yeah, he was probably a little smarter. He probably was a little smarter.
I'm saying it's a little cruel to Joe McCarthy.
Right.
Ron Johnson, who... it's an interesting thing. I think Trump's had a pretty rough week. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of it's pretty tough close of the week with the headlines about the firing and even Sean Hannity acknowledging it. But I would argue that Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, had a rougher week. And he had a rougher week because he went out and positioned himself at the front lines of attempting, keyword attempting, to defend Donald Trump with a suggestion that there was a secret cabal.
All right, well, let's listen to it, okay? Here's the senior senator from Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
What this is all about is further evidence of corruption, more than bias, but corruption at the highest levels of the FBI and that secret society. We have an informant that's talking about a group that were holding secret meetings off-site. There's so much smoke here. There's so much suspicion.
Let's stop there. A secret society, a secret meetings off-site of the Justice Department.
Correct.
And you have an informant saying that?
Yes.
Is there anything more about that?
No, we have to dig into it. This is not a distraction. Again, this is bias, potentially corruption at the highest levels of the FBI that is now investigating. And now this is, and by the way, Robert Mueller used to run the FBI. He is in no position to do an investigation over this kind of misconduct. So I think at this point in time, we probably should be looking at a special counsel to undertake this investigation.
Okay. So the next day, let's hear what he has to say after that begins to fall apart.
Did your informant confirm that these offside meetings took place?
Now, listen, the term secret society comes from Strzok and Page. All I said when I read that, it didn't surprise me because, you know, we are the committee the whistleblowers come to talk about all kinds of problems throughout the federal government. And so I had heard of a group of people within the FBI holding secret offsite meetings. So I was just kind of connecting the dots. So that didn't surprise me when I heard that term. But again, that's Strzok and Page's term, not mine.
And then there's the next day after that fell apart.
After reading those transcripts of the text messages, do you think it was made as a joke?
It's entirely possible. Let's see what the next text.
What about the number of texts?
The missing ones. Let me just see what the...
Do you owe an apology, sir, for raising these concerns?
We'll see what the next text.
Could have been a joke. But I didn't say that in the initial interview. Interesting thing. I thought this was intriguing. I think Brett Baer actually is, you know, pretty good at what he does. Don't always agree with him. But I thought the most interesting thing about all those exchanges, the whole bit of it, was Brett Baer's response when Johnson said the initial thing. Because no matter how people try to spin this, from here going forward, when Johnson made the initial statement, what was Brett Baer's response? It was, "Whoa, hold it there. Let's pause here. I want to ask you some more questions about this." And you know what I'm saying? It was, he repeated what Johnson had said with a little more clarity to make sure that Johnson had said it. And Johnson confirmed, said, yeah. And then he asked follow-up questions on it because clearly Brett Baer, in very appropriately, thought he either had one of the hottest scoops of the season or he had a senator saying something pretty weird. And no matter what, I think Baer handled himself very, very well by pinning it down and getting clarity rather than just taking off on it. But it's in that exchange that Johnson sort of, put himself into the box there. He didn't. There's not really a way to get around confirming when it's repeated to you. Yeah, that's what I meant. And then saying, oh, we're going to dig into it more, right? I mean, it was very interesting exchange where, frankly, I thought the Fox host did a good job.
This man is a United States senator. He attacked the FBI without any proof or evidence. He attacked the special prosecutor without any evidence. The man clearly has smeared law enforcement. I'm going to ask you something. Joe Scarborough, actually, he doesn't know about Wisconsin's history. Do you think that Ron Johnson should be recalled?
Oh, gosh. Well, as you well know from 20 years ago, recalling senators is a complex thing. There's some debate about the legalities of it, about the structures of it. I happen to think it is doable, and it's under Wisconsin law. It's something that, when my read of the law suggests that you can do it, there are people that would challenge that, of course. I think that Johnson has put himself in a position as the chairman of that committee, at the very least, that, A, of course, you know, you owe the apology. I think there's a legitimate argument for a censure by the Senate, where his colleagues take him down for what he has done. Because that really is the parallel to McCarthy, by the way. The Senate censured him. As regards a recall, you know, that recalls are things that have to come from the people. They have to be popular sentiment. But I would suggest that Johnson's getting himself into the territory. And you know, how he responds to this, frankly, has a lot to do with questions like the one you're asking, right? If he were to acknowledge, wow, I really got that wrong. Of course, he'd probably blame an aide or something like that. But if he were to at least kind of aggressively clarify, express at least a measure of remorse for getting something so dramatically wrong and so harmful, I think he probably dials himself down from that. If he sticks to this, or if he, you know, just kind of tries to go on from it, I do think there'll be discussion of, you know, how to hold him to account, both in Washington and in Wisconsin.
What a stain! I mean, how embarrassing!
Well, and also the use of the term secret society, right? This notion, and admittedly, he's suggesting it came from other people and stuff like this and all that, but just the pushing of the notion of secret cabals within the government trying to take down the president. I mean, that gets you to, you know, all the spy thrillers and the movies of the early 60s and things like that. And I think it's a very, you know, we talk about that something's being absurd, stupid, wrong, whatever. I think this one genuinely gets into the dangerous category, because if we really set up a situation where there's a tremendous number of people, a substantial portion of the American population, that thinks that parts of the government are conspiring to take down Donald Trump, then when you get real information, legitimate information about wrongdoing by the president or by people around him, you sort of have an organized mass of people that will not only disbelieve it, but that will be presumably or potentially supportive of responses to those revelations, a firing of Mueller, you know, some other effort to, you know, shut down investigations, to fire people at the FBI, whatever, all these things. You have a portion of people that will be supportive of that, in part because they have heard from media and also from their United States senator, a United States senator who chairs a committee, who's been, you know, kind of throwing fuel on the fire. So that's why I say you're getting into a pretty dangerous territory.
Who shares a number of things in common with the president, and right at the top of the list is they both consume a lot of the Fox News channel.
I think that it is fair to say that diversifying the sources of information for Donald Trump and for Ron Johnson would be a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mix in the Weekly Reader.
You know what? I'll mix in the National Review and other conservative publications. I'll mix in mainstream conservative publications like the National Review and the Weekly Standard.
I don't know if I'd call them mainstream, but they're certainly
conservative. What I said is they're mainstream conservative publications.
Right.
And all I'm saying is that I would suggest that if this president and Ron Johnson just got their information from conservative publications, conservative publications with some standards and some credibility, I think we'd be a lot better off than where we're at right now.
But then they wouldn't get to see the car chase.
No, they wouldn't.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thank you for coming on to Sly's Office today.
Pleasure, my friend.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.